Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Basic Latina Podcast, an intimate conversation with friends about love, life, wellness, and everything in between. And today I have on the phone Kibra Smith Bolden. Now, Kibra is someone who needs no introduction, but I'm going to give it to you guys anyway because she is super, super accomplished, and I can't wait to dive into this interview. Now, Kibra is a registered nurse, and she is the founder and president of Canna Health, a division of the Healthy Choice LLC and the first brand to join the Higher Community Corporation Digital Cannabis Accelerator Pilot Program. Kibra is also the Connecticut market leader for Women Grow, a networking organization that empowers women to become leaders and entrepreneurs in the cannabis industry. She is the director of the New England region of Minorities for Medical Marijuana, and her professional memberships include the Connecticut Coalition to Regulate Marijuana, Connecticut Normal and Minority Cannabis Business Association. In addition to that, Kibra is also the co-chief nursing officer of the steering committee of Hebrew County, Colorado's Ferris Green Campus Project to fight opiate addiction with cannabis.
Thank you so much, Kibra. Welcome.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. I know you're so busy, so I really appreciate you hopping on the phone. And you were someone that I wanted to have on the podcast a long time ago, but I needed, the timing was not right, but I think the timing is perfect now.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be on. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yes, yes. And, you know, with Canna Health opening up in Hartford, its second location, I think this is perfect timing as well for us to talk about that. So I want to jump right in, Kibra, to kind of you talking about how you got involved with the cannabis industry. Because honestly, when I was looking for a woman of color to be on the podcast to talk about cannabis, you are the one and only person that I found who's kind of spearheading this kind of movement. And then I heard about Canna Health, and I've been talking about it with my patients. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with, you know, the medical marijuana industry and how Canna Health started.
Okay, so that's kind of a long story. but what, so in 2013, my grandmother suffered an aneurysm. And so my grandmother was like one of my sheroes. She was a New Haven, Connecticut civil servant. She worked with the youth in the community for many years. People, I remember as a little girl, people would come up to us and be like, "Your grandmother changed my life." You know, so a lot of people have respect for her. So she had an aneurysm. They were able to save her life, but it devastated her mind and her body. But, you know, she was a go-getter. She was driving at 88 years old. She had a boyfriend. So, you know, I knew she wouldn't want to be incapacitated in any way, shape, or form. I knew she wanted to be better, would want to be better. But she would not participate in physical therapy. And I really just, like, could not figure out why she wasn't participating in physical therapy and other things, and eating. And, you know, it was a bunch of different things. She was withdrawn. And, of course, you know, I know that she was affected by the aneurysm, but I just was surprised that she wasn't participating in getting better. And one day I was just really kind of sad, frustrated. I don't know what it was, because my grandmother came to live with me for her recovery. And so, you know, all the responsibility for her care fell to me. And I was just frustrated because I felt like I wasn't able to help my grandmother. And I prayed and I was like, "God, show me what I need to do." And it hit me just like that, like that my grandmother had told me a while ago that she used to have to smoke a joint and take a bath to get her body moving because she had severe arthritis throughout her body.
Wow.
So I was like, "Oh, okay. So we need to just get grandma high. This is what's needed." I luckily, her caregiver at the time, because I had to, you know, I was working full time. I'm a registered nurse. I'm a mother. I have four children, a set of triplets who are 17 years old. And then I have an older daughter who's 24 and she's married and they have two kids. So I have two grandchildren. But anyway, at the time, I didn't have the grandkids. But, you know, I had a busy life and a family. And so I had a caregiver taking care of my grandmother while I was at work. And luckily, the caregiver was a marijuana smoker. Mm-hmm. And so her and my grandmother did their thing in the morning. And within a month, my grandmother, who was wheelchair bound, was walking with a walker.
Wow.
She was aphasic. She had difficulty communicating. We were able to communicate with her more effectively. She was engaged with the family, started going to church, eating, drinking, laughing. Like, it was just such a wonderful turnaround to see. And it happened so quickly. And so after years of being a nurse, and I did primarily medication administration. So every day, all day, I was giving patients pills and never seeing them get better. But my grandmother, you know, consumes a natural herb and it deals with her pain. It's dealing with, you know, all her mood. It's dealing with her appetite, everything with one little plant. And so I was like, I need to study this plant as a practitioner.
At the time you weren't even smoking or anything like that or engaging in it at all?
No. I mean, I'm over the years, you know, like I probably tried to smoke for the first time when I was like 15 or 16 years old, you know, but I never inhaled. So I never got high. So I was like, what is all this hype that people are excited about?
Right.
I know what the hype is. I know what the hype is now.
Right.
But over the years, you know, and then plus, you know, being a registered nurse, you know, you're told that, you know, those things are taboo for healthcare mm-hmm. providers and, mm-hmm. you know, civil, like police officers and firefighters. But really, people just don't understand the science of the plant. So anyway, I wanted to learn about this plant that I saw do these miraculous things in my grandmother. And so I started researching it. I found a school in Massachusetts, and I took a 12-course program on mm-hmm. cannabis, but it dealt with the science of cannabis. So I learned, you know, about the endocannabinoid system and, you know, terpenes and the different cannabinoids and how they work in our body. And then I learned about the medicinal qualities of it and how you can use different strains of cannabis to manage symptoms. So you can find a specific strain that can help lower your blood pressure, or a specific strain that can help, you know, reduce the nausea and vomiting that cancer patients experience, you know, things of that nature. But then I also started learning about the social justice aspects mm-hmm. of the cannabis industry and the racially motivated factors that went into cannabis prohibition.
Yep.
And, you know, how, you know, like you have like a president like Nixon who specifically said that he was going to target the black and the hippies for cannabis because the hippies were anti-war, and I have finger quotes in the air because, you know, they were anti-war. And so the one thing they had in common was they consumed marijuana. And so that's how he was going to target them, by criminalizing a medicine that the United States knows is a medicine because they have a patent on it that says that it's medicine. Look up, people, U.S. patent number 6630507. It says specifically that cannabinoids, specifically CBD, cannabidiol, is medicine. It is a neuroprotector, so it protects the brain. So despite all of the years that we've heard that cannabis just kills your brain cells, mm-hmm. the U.S. has a patent that proves that cannabis preserves your brain cells. Then it also says in that same patent, 6630507, that the cannabinoid CBD, again, is an anti-inflammatory. Almost every disease is a result of inflammation, the inflammatory process that occurs in the body. You know, so these are things that the United States knew, but yet they still criminalized people for consuming what they knew to be medicine. So, you know, like I learned all these things, mm-hmm. and then I also got connected to organizations. So while I was there, you know, I'm meeting people who are advocating, and these were all people in Massachusetts advocating for cannabis legalization at the time. They were just about to vote on they had a ballot vote initiative to legalize cannabis when I was going to school up there. So I'm learning from advocates. These are my teachers in the class, you know, other people who are trying to learn about the industry, or other people who have been in the industry, you know, people who've been growing in their homes and you know, creating their own kind of salves and tinctures that are cannabis based. And so I'm learning from all these people, but then they're also like encouraging me to start connecting to organizations. And one of them was Women Grow, mm-hmm. which is a national networking organization that encourages women to become entrepreneurs in the cannabis space. And so I decided that since I was going to school in Massachusetts, I wanted to expand my network a little bit. So I started attending Women Grow meetings in New York. And my very first Women Grow meeting I went to was in Harlem. And it was on getting more women of color involved in the cannabis industry. Nice. So I get there. So I'm like, oh, this is for me. They made this specifically for me. You know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly. So,
you know, and then I learned the power of networking through that organization as well, because that first, and I learned the thing about my experience in this industry and cannabis, that I've learned and accelerated so quickly in this industry because I know this is where I belong, you know, but I also know that there's information that I must share quickly with communities that would never get this information, that would never have access to this medicine, that would never have the ability to engage in a $1 billion industry if I didn't suck up all I could in information and make all the connections that I possibly could to bring back to my community. So anyway, you know, so I get connected with Women Grow. Mm-hmm. I go to my first event. And I'm walking around, and I'm introducing myself to every single person in the room, the power of networking. And I'm saying, hi, my name's Kebra. I'm a nurse from Connecticut, and I want to work in the cannabis industry. I think I want to own a dispensary. And by the time I finished, and I literally shook everyone's hand in that room and said those lines. And by the time I finished walking around that room, I had realized, what am I talking about, a dispensary? I'm a nurse. Cannabis is medicine. Let me get into the medical side of cannabis, you know? And so, you know, my purpose became dual in nature. So first I wanted to connect with this network and bring this organization to Connecticut, because at the end of the day, this is my home. This is where I was born and raised, and my people need it. Like, hello. You know, my community needs a boost.
Absolutely.
We need a connection, because we need to build legacies. Like, it's no longer a job that's gonna work. You can't pass your job down to your children, but you can pass your business down to your children.
Hello.
You know, you can pass your work, you know, your works and your efforts down to your children. And so, you know, I after attending a few New York meetings, I was like, I need to bring this to Connecticut. And let me tell you how good God is and how things work. I had decided I wanted to open up Women Grow in Connecticut. So I was sitting down at a Women Grow event, and I'm talking to this woman who is, you know, just sitting there. She has a Women Grow pin on, but I don't really know who she is. And so I'm like, listen, I need to bring Women Grow to Connecticut. Like, I wanna open Women Grow. And she was like, oh, interesting. Well, here's my information. Shoot me an email, you know, or whatever. So come to find out, I'm sitting next to the woman who had just become the new CEO of Women Grow.
Wow.
Kay Garcia, like that day. So within, you know, a week, I got a call that I was able to purchase the license for Women Grow in Connecticut. So I did. So I own Women Grow in Connecticut. And so I started having these networking events every month where I invited. And let me tell you, the networking events that we were doing were excellent. Like, you know, we had lawyers from Wigan and Dana. We had, which is like one of the top law firms in the state. We had the former DCP commissioner who was just running for a governor, Jonathan Harris. You know, we had some really great people who graced our events and shared and really poured into the audience all of this information, you know, and so that was great. I was happy with that. But I also wanted to do something with, again, my nursing career. So I found a way so I could bring the information and network with people. But I also wanted to find a way to help people and be the nurse that I am. Right. And so one of the first things I did was I got certified and became a medical marijuana patient. And so I went through the process.
Okay.
And when I went through the process, I realized that they're like, people got their cards and then they went to the dispensary, but there really wasn't any education in between. So if you have a 80, because this is the reality, I have patients 80 years old come to me who are afraid, deathly afraid of opioids because they watch the news and they know people die and become addicted. And so they don't even want to manage their pain. And so they want to consider cannabis. So they come to me and how is it that we don't educate these people on the different strains, on, you know, consumption methods, you know, vape machine, how to work a vape, all these things. And so I was like, you know, in the healthcare world, that's considered a care gap. you know, and so how do I fill that care gap? And that's kind of where Canna Health came into place, because, you know, I wanted to do a few things with Canna Health. I wanted to be able to provide people with access to obtaining their medical marijuana cards and becoming medical marijuana patients in the state of Connecticut, so that they can manage their symptoms and not have to be dependent on pharmaceuticals and killer opioids and things of that nature. But also because I wanted to protect people in my community who I know are consumers of cannabis, who are opening themselves up to criminalization and prosecution or violation if they're on probation and parole, if they're consuming cannabis and don't have their medical marijuana card. You know, and then that even becomes dual in nature in my task, because not only am I keeping them safe from criminalization and prison and all that stuff I just said, but I'm also, you know, through Canna Health, able to provide them with education and really open their eyes about what cannabis is and direct them on how, you know, they've been out here self-medicating this entire time, but now I can be instrumental in directing them on how to medicate themselves and still be productive. So no, you don't smoke an indica during the day, because indica, you know, the other term they usually say with indica is in the couch, you know, in the couch because of the effects that it has. It relaxes you. It deals with pain and helps you with helps people with insomnia and things of that nature. And so if you tell somebody like, don't smoke an indica during the day, because then you won't be able to keep a job and you won't be motivated at work and things of that nature. So if you're gonna smoke a sativa, which will give you focus and give you clarity and help you to be able to be creative in your thoughts and active and on point, you know. So that's part of the education that I'm able to give, you know. But then the other part of that is the number one diagnosis that we see is post-traumatic stress disorder.
Wow. Okay.
So And you would think that I was dealing with a bunch of veterans or people, you know, who've been off to, who've seen the horrors of war and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I am dealing with the people who have dealt with the horrors of war, but the war is the war on the streets and the war on drugs, which was a war on people. And so we're dealing with people who are every single day living with multiple traumas. Like, they've grown up in the hood, in poverty, witness violence, you know, lack of access to adequate housing, education, health care. Like, these are all trauma. Poverty, did I say that already? Poverty in and of itself is traumatic, you know? And so to live in these environments and then to wonder why people lash out the way that they lash out, or why they can't, you know, keep a job, or why they have unhealthy relationships, you know, because so many people are trauma victims and they don't even know it because it's just everyday life to them.
Right.
You know, we could tell, you know, you could tell a story. Let's just say you're at work and you work with people of color and you work with people who are not of color. And so, you know, when you're talking to people, white people specifically, about, let's just say I've said, you know, well, my father's in jail. These are realities for people. My father's in jail. My best friend in high school was killed in gun violence. My mother was a victim of domestic violence. I was molested as a child. Like, if you went through, like, and that is a person. I know of a person with those situations. Like, a white person would be like, oh my God. Now, yes, they have different types of traumas. But we just feel like, well, that's just another day in the hood, you know, and we live with these
things. Another person's story,
Exactly. And so, you know, being able to show people that they are trauma victims, show them how to manage the symptoms of trauma with cannabis, but then also to be able to refer them to therapy and to be able to, you know, normalize that. I go on my Facebook lives, or, you know, I talk about being in therapy all the time. I've been in therapy for like a month, and I think it's the best thing in the world. You know, you just get to talk to a professional and have them help you work through your issues and really kind of get to the root of problems. But sometimes it's just good to talk to somebody to just get it out.
Non-objective, absolutely.
Exactly.
Now, you
know, you know,
PTSD was as a diagnosis that you find that a lot of your patients are diagnosed with. For some reason, I thought that maybe anxiety would be the higher amount of patients coming in asking for, you know, cannabis, like, help and things like that.
So anxiety is not a qualifying condition in the state of Connecticut.
What?
So, and truthfully, anxiety is usually a symptom of something else, you know, a symptom of trauma, a symptom of, you know, of something. And so, but yeah, in the state of Connecticut, anxiety in and of itself is not a diagnosis. But again, as a symptom, and a symptom of PTSD, of urban trauma, anxiety is definitely a symptom. So we use people with anxiety to help build their PTSD diagnosis.
Okay,
we use those symptoms to help build that diagnosis.
So if there's a child, if there's an child or an adult or coming into your facility, and they're coming in with, like, you know, say their therapist told them to come there to get medical marijuana card, which I want to explore more. If they just had a diagnosis of depression or anxiety, you guys would want to have a conversation with them about seeing if they have some underlying PTSD so they can qualify. Is that what makes sense? Okay.
Well, what we do is most people know that they don't have one of the, you know, everyone knows that they don't have one of the, if they don't have one of the medical diagnoses, then they're there for PTSD, to be assessed for PTSD. We administer what's called the PCL5, which is a nationally recognized assessment tool for post-traumatic stress disorder. We administer that to the patient. They do a questionnaire. It's questionnaire style. Some things they have to write a narrative, but most things are check off. And we take that information and calculate, you know, the results to determine if someone has post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
Sure. So Canna Health is, I call it a health and wellness center, but we're cannabis focused. Nice. Because we definitely talk about the whole person and, mm-hmm. and like I just told you, we don't just certify people. We also refer them to services, offer education, and so on and so forth. So, but we are a cannabis-based health and wellness center. We provide medical marijuana evaluations and certifications. Mm-hmm. We serve both those over 18 and pediatrics as well. We have a home care element. We also have classes. And we provide, you know, one-on-one education about cannabis and support to people who need, you know, like the first time going to the dispensary. I go with people to the dispensary for the first time and things of that nature. But primarily what we do, the majority of what I do is medical marijuana evaluations and certifications. So in the state of Connecticut, it's a two-step process to become a medical marijuana patient. You have to first be certified by a physician, psychiatrist, or an advanced practice registered nurse. So Canna Health utilizes a nursing model. So I'm a registered nurse, and I serve as a cannabis nurse educator. Mm-hmm. And so all of our offices will have cannabis nurse educators, but then our certifying clinicians are advanced practice registered nurses who are able to work autonomously in the state of Connecticut and can prescribe. So ultimately, with cannabis, you receive a certification, not a prescription. So there's not, you know, we don't say, like, my staff, my APRNs, they don't say, okay, Jane Doe, you need to smoke or you need to consume 10 milligrams of cannabis twice a day in this form or whatever. That's the one thing I love about medical marijuana is that it actually gives patients full control over how they medicate. They are able to dose themselves. You know, they're able to become knowledgeable and figure out what strains work and how often they want to consume it and when they want to consume it and in what form they want to consume it. So anyway, so the first step is to be certified by a physician. That's what we do at Canna Health. The second step is to register with the state of Connecticut and you pay $100 fee. But you can't register with the state of Connecticut until you've been certified.
So when people say that they have like a medical marijuana card, that means that they went through steps A and B, basically. They went through a certification with a prescriber, and then they got registered by the state, and then they get the card, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then when you get a card is when somebody will go to a dispensary. Mm-hmm. Now, since you're kind of a one-stop shop, do you guide people on where they can go to get the marijuana, what dispensaries they can go to, or are there multiple dispensaries in Connecticut? How does that work?
Yep. So there are multiple dispensaries in Connecticut. There are 9 dispensaries. We're gonna be coming to the Hartford area. So there's one in Hartford, one in South Windsor. Down here in New Haven County, there are 2 in Milford, Connecticut, 1 in Brantford, and 1 in Waterbury. There's only 1 in Fairfield County, and that's in Bethel, Connecticut. So they just did a round of applications to open new dispensaries, and I'm pretty sure there's going to be 1 or 2 added to Fairfield County. And so people are able, once they get certified, people are able to then go to the dispensary and begin purchasing items. Now, the dispensary model is a pharmaceutical model. Mm-hmm. So there are pharmacists who run the dispensaries and pharmacy techs. They're the only ones who are allowed to actually work in the dispensary area. And they really provide great education. I have to give it to our dispensaries here in Connecticut. The pharmacists are pretty knowledgeable about cannabis, and they can help patients find the right doses based on their symptoms, and they're really, really helpful, wealths of knowledge. And then our nine dispensaries are supplied by four grow facilities that exist in the state. So there are four grow facilities, one in West Haven, Connecticut, one in Portland, Connecticut, Simsbury, I think is one. I can't think where the fourth one is, but yeah, they're spread around. But they supply all of the nine dispensaries.
Now, if someone meets all the criteria, all the criteria to get a medical marijuana card, they pass, you know, steps A and B and stuff like that. How long does the whole process, you know, take from like start to finish, you think?
So it takes anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks for someone to obtain their card. And what they get is an email. There's like a temporary email that they receive, like within the first 3 to 6 weeks, and then within a month or two they get their hard card in the mail.
Are there any common things that you see that people get turned away for?
Not really. Okay. You know, there are some ethical things that are coming up though. You know, like I had a pregnant girl come in for her certification.
Oh no.
You know, and yeah. I didn't, you know, first of all, you know, I respect my clinician, so, you know, I go with what they would have to say, you know, but you know, you have to really kind of face and consider these dilemmas when you're in business. And, mm-hmm. you know, like this young lady said that she was going to consume regardless.
Wow.
You know, so how do you manage that? Do you say, well, we won't certify you? And she just gets cannabis from the streets and she doesn't know what it's mixed with or whatever. And, you know, that could be more damaging, you know, but dang, you know, nobody should smoke anything when they're pregnant, you know. So what should we do? You know, so we suggested that she take CBD-based products if she need to do anything, which doesn't have THC, it doesn't have the high effect, you know, and it's found to be safe in pregnancy. But even that is question, you know, it's just still a lot of areas that are, because of federal prohibition, because cannabis is still federally illegal, it makes it impossible to participate in a lot of research programs and things of that nature. So there's still a lot of questions out there. You know, we're only going by a lot of anecdotal information, but other countries are doing great things in research, like Israel, and now Canada is federally legal, so that opens up their ability to do more research, and they're actually exporting cannabis, so they got a lot of things going on up in Canada.
Where do you think that Connecticut is going to be in terms of the cannabis industry? You think that we'll be legalizing soon, or, you know, I know the midterm elections are coming up. Does that determine in any kind of way where this is going to go?
I'm thinking that 2020 is when we'll probably go legal here in Connecticut. Midterm elections, I do think they'll make a heck of a lot of difference in a lot of regards. Like, for instance, I was just told, and I haven't had the opportunity to verify it, but I heard it from a very reliable source, just now, that there's going to be, a question on the ballot this election cycle that asks about having ballot voting. So the ability to be able to us to be able to vote in legislation, as opposed to that just being left to our elected officials, you know, and because of the fact that you better stop it. And because of the fact that these other states are, because of the fact that these other states are ballot initiative states, this is how they've gotten, like Massachusetts, this is how they've gotten legalization passed.
Yeah.
Because people were able to vote for it themselves and not have, we didn't have to wait for legislatures, or they didn't have to wait for legislators to vote it in. So, you know, that would be huge. So this midterm election could really make a big difference, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I had a question from one of my friends who's in medical school right now, and she wanted to know what would be the process for providers getting certified. You talked about your journey. Would it be similar to that, you know, you going to a facility where you can get a certification, or can Canna Health help a provider get certified?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Nice. Perfect.
And not only, certify, I've certified just about everybody, like from lawyers, doctors, firefighters, like a wide variety of people, from all walks of life, different age ranges, all colors, different socioeconomic backgrounds, everyone. But one thing we do provide for providers is additional education, specifically nurses. You know, of course, I'm a nurse, so that's where my heart is. So, you know, I provide nursing, a cannabis nursing course. You know, and we and a medical marijuana course, the things that were afforded to me through my education in Massachusetts, that we try to make sure that we have, you know, access to that here in Connecticut. So, like, for instance, this Saturday, I'm teaching a 4-hour medical marijuana course. The Saturday after, we're having how to make your own edibles course. So, you know, those are the kind of classes that we
have. What, well, I mean, with Canna Health growing so much, what made you come to Hartford? Because you guys are in New Haven, your website is beautiful. It seems like it's a well-running machine. So was that part of the reason why you guys decided to come to Hartford? What are you kind of hoping for with opening a location over on this side of Connecticut?
Well, it was never my intention to keep this access limited to just my community. I wanted to start here, of course, because, you know, this is where I come from. But I definitely wanted to spread throughout the state once I realized the effect that Canna Health can have on communities. And so, of course, naturally, the next place to go would be Hartford, you know. The same kind of scenario, you know, the inner city affected by the war on drugs, you know, people hurting, needing to be healed and made whole, and in the process being helped to deal with the issues that they're facing. And so, of course, you know, Hartford was definitely a logical next step. And then it also worked out really well. You know, I lucked up on a beautiful office on a beautiful street in Hartford. We're going to be at 57 Pratt Street. And I don't know if you're familiar with Pratt Street.
Yes.
Is it Pratt Street? I'm so excited, you know, like just to be, and we have like beautiful windows in the office. So that look down on Pratt Street, we're on the fourth floor. So I'm really excited about how I got a great location and, you know, all these things that are just coming together to let me know that this is where I belong.
Yes, yes. Will the Hartford location function just like the New Haven location, where you need to have an appointment to get an evaluation and, you know, classes and education and certification and stuff like that for providers?
Yep, so... We in New Haven and Hartford, we will accept walk-ins. We always do.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, we do accept appointments, and people with appointments are, you know, they definitely get served first. So it's good to have an appointment, is my point. But yeah, we plan on offering the same services that we offer down in New Haven, up in Hartford. Definitely gonna be offering classes. Definitely, and we'll probably do the same kind of thing we did in New Haven, where you know, my first month or so, it was just the one office where we did certifications. But then we moved, then I expanded and got the office next door to our first office where we, and so now I call that the studio. And we have our classes there. We're renting out the space for yoga, Pilates, meditation, creative dance and movement and that kind of thing. And so, you know, just because we really want to deal with the whole person, mind, body, soul, spirit. And so we'll do that in Hartford too. We'll probably, you know, but there's also a lot of life and activity in Hartford already. So just finding ways to tap in and network with things that already exist. So like downstairs from my new office in Hartford is a paint and sip place. And
there's a new hookah place over there. Yep,
and a hookah place. So, you know, I may not have to go into certain arenas that I feel like are necessary in New Haven and Hartford, but I know I'm gonna find ways to innovate in Hartford and make you know our presence in the community one that is appreciated.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, Kibra, you've done an amazing job of describing to us, you know, how you've excelled in this field and how you turned a struggle in your family into, like, you know, a growing business. As a woman of color who's leading this, you know, all these organizations, have you come across any pushback from people? Because, you know, marijuana is very taboo. You know, people do it, but they don't want to talk about it. And I feel like now it's being more and more accepted. But I'm sure climbing up the ladder on your own wasn't always so easy. So what kind of pushback did you get specifically as a woman of color in the cannabis industry?
Well, to be honest, I don't really feel like I've gotten a lot of pushback as a woman of color in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's primarily because I'm the only woman of color in the industry in Connecticut that's really kind of making any noise.
Okay.
And so I think when it's one person, one black person, one Latina person, one, you know what, I think that it's okay.
Okay.
We'll let her in. We'll let her slide. You know, and so I'm thankful that, you know, I've been able to kind of position myself. But I do feel like if we were to mobilize and really connect and work together and, you know, fight for legalization, fight for rights in the cannabis industry, for equity in the cannabis industry, if we were to do that, then I think there'd start being a lot more pushback. But I think, you know, I've been a little bit accepted. But, you know, I have, as a professional, had to deal with some pushback, you know, because when I started in the cannabis industry, I was still working as a full-time registered nurse. Matter of fact, I had two full-time jobs. And as I became more public and more vocal about cannabis and my rights and my, you know, my being a patient, mm-hmm. a medical marijuana patient, and, you know, what I was advocating for, it became difficult for me to work for employers, especially because I was a home care nurse. So I was going into people's homes. So I was just on the news talking about cannabis and going into, you know, elderly patients' homes. And they're like, oh, wait a minute, you know, because those stereotypes still exist to this
Absolutely.
Day. That,
yeah.
You know, because I'm a marijuana consumer, that I'm some sort of criminal, or, you know, all my intentions are such. So, you know, so that made it difficult. So I really spent this last year building my business, which is successful, which is, you know, a great thing, but it's just like any other business. You know, your first year of entrepreneurship, or two or three or five, you know, are usually quite challenging. And just because it's weed, I'm air quoting again, it don't mean it's necessarily moving or growing like weeds. You know, it's still taking time. You know, there's still a lot of effort to be put into it, and there's a lot of sacrifice. So because of the fact that the career that I had, you know, for a while, it was difficult for me to even have a job. So my children have sacrificed. I've sacrificed. Girl, I done downgraded my car. You know, just different things that I had to do, you know, but to be able to bring this to the place that it's at and is growing, and the future is so bright, and I'm so excited about, you know, what I'm going to be able to pass down to my children in the future. You know, so it's all worth it. But, you know, but yeah, I did professionally get some pushback. But now, like the agency, I'm a nursing supervisor every now and again at a nursing home. And like, they actually sought me out, and the person who's the director of nursing is my friend on Facebook. So she knows everything that I do, you know, it's starting to be accepted, you know, especially amongst nursing professionals. We're all so frustrated with pharmaceuticals, and especially specifically opioids, you know, and so, you know, many of us are looking for alternatives. And to be able to offer, you know, I've been interviewing people, APRNs, to come work in the Hartford office. And I've had a very interesting group of people who have applied for these positions. And one of them was this older white woman from Bolton, Connecticut, I think. And I was like, okay, listen. And she was dressed so prim and proper. She was so cute. And I was like, okay, listen, why do you want to work with me and in cannabis? And she said, you know, to be honest, I've been a nurse practitioner for over 20 years. And people aren't getting better with what I was doing. I want to do something different to help people that actually helps people get better. You know, so... You know, we're really being able to be effective in the community, and I'm loving, you know.
Do you think there needs to be like a bigger like call for action for providers who want to be in this field, like medical marijuana? Do we need more people in the field in order to make this
absolutely
grow? Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. That's what I'm telling you. You know, like, I can make a little bit of noise. And it's almost like accepted noise. I don't even like that it's accepted noise, you know, because it should be, change should be a little uncomfortable, you know, and so people should, when I walk in the room and I'm fighting for the rights of people who are still incarcerated for cannabis, and I'm fighting for the rights of people who have cannabis-related felonies and things on their records that totally exclude them from being able to participate in an industry that should be afforded to them, you know, so that shouldn't be comfortable, you know. So for me to walk in a room and be able to be heard, that's great, but I want to affect change, and I know I can't do that by myself, you know. It's going to take coordination and collaboration and, you know, unification to really make that kind of change happen.
And it sounds like you already have maybe a network of people who are behind you and supportive of you. So I think that this industry can only go up. I see friends doing little pop-up events where they're doing like Canna and Chill and like just things for people to figure out like ways to learn more about CBD oil and cannabis and marijuana use and the benefits. And because I think it's funny, because before I did this interview with you, I wanted to ask you questions like, you know, what are the benefits and things like that. But I think that it's pretty obvious what the benefits are. I think that what's important is just figuring out how people can get the services so they can get the help. I think that's most important.
Right. I mean, and then the other side of that we really didn't touch on too much, except for my own entrepreneurial path, but like entrepreneurship in this industry, you know, being able to be a owner of, you know, a company that, and let's not talk about just touching the plant. You know, the industry is vast and wide. The lanes are almost innumerable right now because of the fact that they need everything in this industry. So, like, I just did a talk and I was saying how, you know, right now I need an accountant, but I need an accountant with specific knowledge about tax law to protect my cannabis, like to be able to make my cannabis business protected and make sure that I'm getting credit for things. You know, there are certain things that just because you're a cannabis business, you can't write off certain items and different things. And so, you know, I need somebody knowledgeable about that. That's a cannabis accountant. You know, there are people who I this young woman who was a realtor in New Haven, Melissa Lytrell, I was like, listen, I need to find a dispensary space. Like, I need your help. These are the specifications. And so now she knows what the laws are for and what the specifications and requirements are for a dispensary in the state of Connecticut, so she can help the next person do that. So now she's a can of realtor, you know? Wow. I mean, people who make packaging, people who make, you know, bags that are smell proof for women to be able to carry their cannabis that are cute, blinged out or something.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. There is opportunity for so many people to be in this industry, and not just and specifically what you're doing, but in other ways as well. So there's opportunities for jobs and careers long term.
Yep, exactly.
Wow. I feel like I've learned so much, Kibra, and I know that I could talk to you about this forever, but I definitely am conscious of the time and I'm respectful of that. But I wanted to kind of end this by talking a little bit about what inspires and motivates you. Are there any books, podcasts, videos, anyone that you follow or kind of are in tune with to kind of get you going and motivated throughout your days and your careers and stuff like that?
Honestly, if you had asked me this like 6 months ago, I probably would have started rattling off a whole bunch of people's names and stuff like that. because I, you know, at different points and times, I've been inspired by so many people. There are so many pioneers in this industry, from Wanda James, who opened the first, who is the first Black woman to open a dispensary in the United States. Followed by Dr. Shonda Macias, who is the second Black woman to open a dispensary in the United States. Followed by Hope Wiseman, who is the third Black woman in the United States to open a dispensary. And that's it. You know what I mean? There's three. And so, you know, so those kind of people have inspired me. You know, Gia Marone, who is the VP of Women Grow, like, oh my gosh, there's so many. Roz McCarthy, who started Minorities for Medical Marijuana. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many people that have inspired me. How Beth Waterfall, see, now I gotta start naming names. Chanel Lindsay, oh my gosh, Shalene Title, who's the commissioner of the Cannabis Control Commission in Massachusetts, who's an advocate. I mean, Jason Ortiz, there's so, oh my gosh, Anita Penny, Jane Green. I mean, there's so many people who I just have been inspired by. But I gotta say right now, my one and my primary inspiration every day that's pushing me, that keeps me moving, is my faith and my belief in God. And because there have been times where I didn't know what was happening, you know, and which way I was going. And I feel like God just has led me through darkness, and I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but he kept, like, I'm unscathed, like you couldn't even tell the stuff I've been through this past year, you know, or whatever. And so I'm like inspired by God's love to help me continue to push forward and show my community and the people that I encounter, you know, his love and his light. And so that's really my inspiration at this juncture.
No, that is beautiful. That's beautiful, Kibra. Is there something that you do every day to kind of start your day off and get you ready for everything ahead.
Besides waking and baking?
Yes.
every day. I mean, well, I just adopted this where I feel like I did this, but I'm formally doing it now, where every morning I just begin to say what I'm thankful for. I guess I'm talking to God, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm just really making sure that I acknowledge all the things that I'm thankful for every single day. And that's really it.
Well, no,
you know, I tell the people that
things is amazing. Yeah.
I tell the people that I love them. I show the people that I love them. And I think that's important to do every day too. And
give people flowers while they're still alive. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And is there something other than obviously smoking that you do for self-care?
Oh my gosh. My favorite thing in the world is to take a bath. Oh my,
lovely.
Baths are beautiful. Have you ever heard of Spa Castle in New York?
No, what is that?
Oh my God, you gotta go there. It's like a big bathhouse, like an olden days bathhouse. Like you walk around, well, you walk around, it's just a wonderful place. But there's just nothing but water, and they're like, oh gosh, they have pools and they're warm and they're heated. It's just such a wonderful place. You gotta go check it out.
Okay.
Spa Castle. The one I went to was in Queens. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. No,
if
definitely.
You like baths, you'll love that.
I definitely don't take enough baths because I don't fit in my bathtub because I live in a very small apartment in Hartford, but that is definitely the goal one day. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us, Kibra, where we can find you on the socials, your website, and things like that, and then about the grand opening of Canna Health in Hartford and when that is.
Okay, so I'll start with that because I'm very, very excited about the grand opening in Hartford, which is Friday, November 9th. And what we're going to be doing on the 9th is just an open house style, you know, afternoon event where mm-hmm. we are gonna have a ribbon cutting. I've invited the mayor of Hartford to come and Senator Doug McCrory and Councilwoman Wilda Lees Bermudez will be there. And so, you know, but really what it's gonna be is just, you know, coming to see our new office, mm-hmm. Hearing about the services that we provide. And, you know, and just really getting to meet some folks in the Hartford community. But then on the 10th, the next day, which is the Saturday, the 10th, yeah. we're going to actually be doing certification. So helping people get their medical marijuana cards up in Hartford. And if you come in on the 10th and you mention grant opening, you get 25% off your a standard evaluation. So that's a great added benefit for that day. So I'm really, really excited. We're at 57 Pratt Street, Suite 405 in Hartford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So that's on the fourth floor. And
how long is the opening on the 9th?
From 4 to 7.
Okay, perfect. Nice.
4 to 7, and we'll be doing evaluations on Saturday from 10 to 2. And so to reach us or to reach me, so on social, on Facebook, I'm Kibra Smith Bolden. I'm corny. It's just my name. On Instagram, I'm even cornier because, my name on Instagram is KBreezy 494. So that's my Instagram name. And then for business for Canna Health on Facebook, we're Canna Health Hartford and Canna Health New Haven. On Instagram, we're currently Go Canna Health, but we are changing to Visit Canna Health because I'm changing my website to Visit Canna Health. So, but right now, our current website is www.gocannahealth.com, and we will be changing, probably going live by next week with www.visitcannahealth.com. And then my other website where we sell our CBD products, which are the non-psychoactive form of cannabis, we have tinctures, we have isolate, we have vaporizers, and we have honey, and we have coconut oil, all with CBD infused, which again, remember I had talked a while ago about how CBD is an anti-inflammatory, and that just about all disease processes are related to inflammation. And so CBD really helps with that. So we sell those products, and that website is buycannahealthcbd.com. Simple. www.buycannahealthcbd.com.
Oh, thank you so much, Kabra. I'm so excited, and I'm definitely going to be at the grand opening because it's after work, so yay! I'll be there. Oh, I'm so excited. Yay! And thank you so much for letting me interview you and letting a stranger talk to you about your life. And
I know I can really talk too, so.
No, your story.
I'm sorry if I talked too much.
No, this was great. Yeah, and your story was beautiful. And I think a lot of people are going to really be pleased with this episode. And I hope that people get something from this. I will be adding all of your links and everything in the show notes. But for now, I will definitely tell people also about the grand opening as well. But thank you again so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No problem.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the Basic Latina podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you want to reach us, please do so on Instagram and Facebook at Basic Latina Podcast. Or if you'd like to write us an email with any questions, suggestions, or comments, you can write us in at basiclatinapodcast@gmail.com. Sound editing for this episode is by moi, and the music is by Chef Dog. Talk to you guys soon. Stay well and take care.